This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer.
You're listening to the UAV Digest, episode number 22. I'm David Vanderhoof in Philly.
And I'm Max Flight in Hartford.
And Max, we're going 2 weeks in a row. We have a guest this week, don't we?
We have a fantastic guest. Our guest maybe has discovered some magic that the rest of us wish we might have. And we have with us this episode, Manny Cohn. Manny, thanks for joining us on the show.
Gentlemen, you need tighter security around this place if you're going to let me on your podcast.
Oh, this is going to be good, I can tell.
Thanks for having me. I am thrilled to be able to I feel like I'm standing in the midst of two of some of the best aviation podcasters out there on the iTunes and the Stitcher forums right now. Believe me, I've listened to lot of them, and some of them are a little rough, and you guys are actually bringing a lot of meaningful content to the table. So thank you for having me.
Well, thank you, Manny. It's very kind. Very, very kind. Now, you're the owner of Don't Tell Me, Show Me, which maybe you can tell us a little bit about the services that you offer.
Don't Tell Me, Show Me. So, wow. The name has a little bit of a chip on its shoulder already. But Don't Tell Me, Show Me is my, how do I say this? It is the first quality control company, if you will, that actually does background checks on realtors, because home sellers today don't really have anything that they can use to vet these realtors other than what they say about themselves or what Aunt Jenny says about them. And so I provide I provide home sellers a better class of realtor by doing a Carfax-like background check on the realtor performance, as well as provide them some superior marketing to help help them serve their home sellers better.
Now, that kind of marketing, you're speaking about aerial marketing, I would assume.
Well, we didn't have aerial marketing 7 years ago, at least nothing that was very cost effective. But since the UAVs have come out, I have added those as my a very key piece of my multimedia arsenal when filming luxury real estate.
Now, here's the thing. We all know, and we've certainly talked about this a lot, that we are extremely limited these days in the U.S. in terms of commercial use of UAVs or drones or whatever we're going to call them. But you are trained and certified and insured, in fact, as a civilian drone pilot. Isn't that right?
Indeed. Indeed, I am.
Okay, so the follow-on question is, all right, how did you make that happen and the rest of us can't?
Right, so the 50 phone calls I get a day are exactly that. How do I do it? How did you do it? What the heck happened? How can I do what you're doing out here in parts unknown? You know, I kind of stumbled onto this unknowingly. This was born out of frustration. My experience with getting into UAV was born because on some luxury shoots where, you know, in real estate, we get in these helicopters and take the doors off and we'll stick a cameraman or something out there and we'll get as low as the municipality will allow us to go, which generally is like 500 feet above the hard deck. But while all these guys were patting themselves on the back for getting some helicopter-based footage, I was wildly disappointed in the product that I was able to produce from a traditional helicopter. We couldn't drop below 500 feet. The stabilization of the photos was poor, let alone, we're not even talking about video yet. We're just talking still photography. So out of, you know, I found helicopters to be clunky, loud, expensive, and disappointing in the final product. And from that frustration, I said to myself, there has got to be a better way. I wanted something that I could literally fly through the front door. And so thus began my journey into figuring out, okay, well, what what is that? I didn't really know about UAVs and UAS. But so we tried all sorts of crazy things that finally allowed me to get to the UAV table. But one of those, I guess the midpoint was like all crazy inventors, we don't always follow the rules along the way. We find our way and we ask for forgiveness, not permission in some cases.
Sure.
And one of those cases was tying a zip line, if you will, a metal cable from a second story balcony, extending that metal cable over a public road. If you're not cringing already, you should be.
Yeah, I'm getting a little nervous.
All right, imagine. And then essentially building and welding a rig and sending a very expensive camera down this zip line in order to get this sexy luxury real estate shot. So after burning a lot of calories on that and breaking a few rules, again, disappointing. Not even close to the kind of cinematic product that we wanted to be able to have.
Can't imagine it would be easy to recreate multiple times either.
No, no. In fact, the blooper footage has yet to see the light of day. But let's just say WD-40 to grease up that zip line. Not a good idea.
Yeah, okay.
not a good idea. And then the research with some of these international-based manufacturers that were providing UAVs caught my attention. But they were cost prohibitive. And that alone was a real barrier to entry for just a kind of a civilian guy like myself. These drone manufacturers that I initially had, you know, discovered, their core customer, if you will, were not civilians or enthusiasts. They were government entities, fire and rescue and police and SWAT. And they had some agriculture background underneath their belt, but they were primarily operating in Canada and in Australia,
yes,
not in the United States, for obvious reasons. Nevertheless, I raised the funds and went ahead and got my very first drone. But unlike Fisher-Price, Fisher-Price doesn't have a My First Drone for kids yet, do they?
Right. No, I don't think so, but that can't be far away.
I think it's right around the corner. But that first drone was in the neighborhood of $20,000. And what was included with that manufacturer was some factory-based training. And I absolutely went through it and then came back to the States. They had to check out my drone through Homeland Security and all sorts of crazy things just for safety reasons. Made it across the border, completely safe, completely legitimate, and then found, as fun as it was and as exciting, and I've got my drone, and then we started seeing some of the defects once I actually put it into the wild, even just as a hobbyist, if you will. And I found that to be an adventure in and of itself.
Well, what kind of defects? What sorts of problems were you finding?
Well, you would be surprised. So you would think that at such a high price point, and such a legitimate, seemingly legitimate, you know, organization, some of these things were really basic. One of them was that you could not operate the camera at night.
Nah.
Now, most of us wouldn't think about operating a camera at night, but I put everything through its paces. What if there's an opportunity to shoot something? What if I want to approach, you know, a local municipality, police department, and demonstrate this, how they themselves can use this, you know, for night shots and things like that. And interestingly enough, this expensive, wildly expensive drone manufacturer that seemingly had all their acts together, they themselves didn't even know that their own camera system did not operate at night. And then upon identifying that for them, their solution broke the drone camera gimbal system entirely. So it was a real interesting and yet some kind of a frustrating journey in and of itself to, you thought, okay, after all this time, after going through these traditional helicopters and, you know, crashing these cameras into my own face with the WD-40 line zip line off the second story balcony, I have finally found the mother load. I finally got the solution. And even that wasn't exactly what was advertised. And so I share all this with you and your listenership because that led me to another place. It led me to be able to share my experiences with the underwriters that actually provide policies for these aircraft based on their criteria. And it has actually turned into a very positive thing because of the education that's taken place so that the crashes that have happened don't have to happen to other people. And the manufacturers themselves can shore up all the things that were essentially unknown from an engineering perspective about their own aircraft.
So when you say underwriters, you're talking about insurance underwriters?
I am. So upon getting factory trained, I was connected with a insurance company that seemed to be one of the very few in North America at the time, and I believe is still one of the only few. But my experience with that insurance company was that that one entity really was, how do I say, the conduit to all the actual UAV underwriter companies. And there's a growing demand for this type of coverage. It was still fairly new to the market, even new to the underwriters themselves. And so as a result, the training requirement was implemented after a real careful review of the changing market of prospective insureds. And I was told that they received several calls every day, ranging from, let's say, the general hobbyist who's trying to break into the commercial production use of UAV to professional aviation pilots and even production companies that have been in the business for years. So they had to develop minimum training standards prior to insuring future risks. And those standards were going to include an FAA ground school in order that they could be certain that their insureds understood basic FAA airspace, FAA regulations, or at the very least, some sort of approved training program for the aircraft itself. And what they shared with me was that nearly every issue that they had seen or encountered had really been the result of avoidable pilot error and or a lack of knowledge of the airspace and federal aviation regulations, and believed that some basic training would serve to eliminate the majority of the losses experienced with that type of aircraft. So that was my experience with the underwriters connected with the insurance company, connected to the training of the initial drone company that I'd met with.
Manny, are these companies, are they involved in other aspects of aviation, and so they kind of, you know, kind of get it a little bit? Or are these just, I don't know, run-of-the-mill
startups?
Insurance companies? Yeah, they're looking just for anything that generates, positive income.
No, that's a great question. They had already been established in traditional aviation insurance. This was a new offering, but still was being developed in terms of the minimum standards and criteria that needed to be met. But they had absolutely been entrenched and already established as a responsible group of insurance and underwriters for aviation insurance.
Okay, that must have made it a bit easier for you to work with them.
Well, I had nowhere else to go, Max.
Yeah.
This was uncharted territory for me. I have absolutely no traditional aviation background prior to getting into this. Since then, of course, FAA ground school has been a real education in and of itself. And just the factory training from a number of different manufacturers, a lot of education going on here. But the one thing that just keeps on, and this is not going to be surprising to you or your listeners, the one thing that I just am so concerned and passionate about is the safety. Because in real estate, I see realtors that supposedly are supposed to be under what they call a code of ethics. I don't want to turn this into a real estate podcast, but they have standards. Like in order to get a real estate license, the whole industry, gentlemen, is founded upon something called a code of ethics. And to me, that would dictate that those that you employ, for instance, some kid comes to an office and says, hey, I can shoot your aerial photography and or video. The very first question that should come out of a realtor or brokerage's mouth is, are you insured? Are you certified? And it doesn't. Because of the pursuit of the almighty dollar because I want to beat my other realtor friends to the table. And I've seen that in many other vertical markets. And my fear is as the technology becomes more and more available, as the price comes down, as these drones at all sorts of consumer and prosumer levels become more and more accessible and in the hands of more and more enthusiasts with no training, no experience, or at least a lack of it, we're going to see some bad things come down the pike before it gets better, is my fear. And those of us that are doing this legitimately with measures that have yet to be defined by the FAA, but demonstrate and meet the criteria of the very underwriters that are connected to the FAA, hopefully we're going to be able to do some good things for a lot of people.
Manny, I guess Max and I have talked about this before, that, you know, the industry needs to start policing itself along the lines of like the Academy of Model Aeronautics, or somewhere along the line, there has to be some sort of group of people who are setting standards and setting requirements and not waiting around for the FAA, because basically if we wait around for the FAA, it may be 2017. Do you see anything out there where that is starting to coalesce into, there's a group of people like yourself where that are driving it, that we might have a UAV organization that would be for set standards for everyone, and someone new could say, here are the requirements you need to do to become competent in flying a UAV. You've talked about going through factory training. I can imagine that each company has their own training, and at some point, one manufacturer gives you 50 hours, the other one says, at 15, you're fine. So where do you think we need to go to get this sort of to coalesce and to start move forward?
In the midst of everyone talking about economic opportunity, right, with the drones and even the exciting, you know, enthusiastic, the agricultural aspects and all the different things and ways that we've thought we can use drones and benefit from them. You know what I haven't heard? I haven't heard anyone talking about, you know what, I want to start a certification program that makes sure that these guys are doing this safely. My passion is to make sure that those that operate these drones are doing it under a unified standard that meets the set the criteria of the FAA and certainly today the underwriters. What's happened? Your question is almost a leading question. If your listeners didn't know any better, they probably thought that I just slipped you a 20 just to ask that question. Because what I haven't shared with you yet is my experience from everything that I've gone through. What I didn't realize was I, having gone through not one but two manufacturer factory training facilities, both nationally and internationally, and meeting the underwriters' standards and their criteria, I, having gone through these training programs myself, and then having experienced some losses where, you know what, I crashed that drone or it crashed, what the heck happened? You know what, they didn't tell me about that in training. That would have been a valuable piece of information to know. Let me write that down and add it to my flight log. How about this electrical failure or this calibration issue? Or, gosh, I didn't know about frequency of radios when I'm behind this, you know, the line of sight. I didn't know that my signal would get blocked and, you know, drop the drone from only 80 feet away. What the heck happened? There were a lot of missing parts to these training programs that I myself had gone through. And so having communicated that to this conglomerate of UAV underwriters, they asked me, and that, here's the leading question, David, is they asked me if I would develop curriculum myself to submit to them for their review that not only incorporates the factory training that I had gone through, but what was missing and what would have been valuable and how they could utilize that and prevent that from other crashes taking place, for property damage, personal injury, things like that. So I've been asked to develop curriculum that is going to be under review by at least three insurers that have agreed to review and consider me being one of the first, I guess, civilian-based training facilities for various types of UAV aircraft that I'll be qualified to train on. And that has led to the reason why some of these manufacturers are going, oh, if Monty is kind of got an in with some of these insurance underwriters for UAV in aviation, it might serve us well to have him, you know, kick the tires of our special drone and see if we can fast track that for certification. So by no means am I saying that I'm the only guy that's doing this, but I am. I have found myself in a unique position and essentially have been asked by this group of underwriters for UAV to capitalize on the experiences that I've received, not only from the drone manufacturers themselves, but my own experiences, and have that be a benefit to everyone for some unified standard of training, so that the manufacturers are not setting their own standards, and then there's just all sorts of problems that arise from that.
And in terms of your own experiences, how have you been able to accumulate those? Have you been able to undertake commercial applications of UAVs in ways that others have not?
I have, and it was unexpected. USA Today approached me out of the blue, and I don't know how they got word of me, but they released a lead story. It made the front page in December. The front page of all things. I thought it must have been a slow news day, but regardless, I made the front page. And then they produced a very well done video that I had imagined would be a group of different types of pilots and their own experiences. And it ended up being just me, just my experience. I was surprised and to be honest, a little pleased, you know, to how it came out. But USA Today did a full feature story and video on me and the certification that I, you know, the journey I took through that, and how it's being applied, like I just shared with evaluating other drone manufacturers and whatnot. And from that, all sorts of interesting people and companies that I never would have probably had the opportunity to meet in person had just started coming out of the woodwork. One of them was a mobile command manufacturer. Kind of like those things that you see in every third bank heist movie on TV, when there's a, you know, the bank gets taken over, and that mobile unit with the satellite
van,
dish on the top,
right.
That van, the guy, the company that makes the vans approached me and wanted to know, hey, can you patch your UAV into our command module, and together could we approach emergency services and show them how this is a great combination. That was one interesting kind of thing. One of the most, I guess, least sensationalized, but most important to me, was an opportunity where I actually had the blessing and the cooperation of emergency services in my local area. I got the chance to work with both fire and police, and they blocked off streets. It wasn't any type of emergency situation, but it was an opportunity for them to see how they could use this or use me as from a consulting perspective until they got on their feet and got their own drone, for lack of a better word. And that was thrilling, because to be able to be a civilian and to have the opportunity to work in conjunction with the governing entities, fire and police, that was a real game changer for me in terms of the credibility that I received from that point on from other drone manufacturers and from other emergency services entities that have approached me since then. Because as you might suspect, a civilian walking up to some, can you imagine getting the phone call? Hey, it's Monty Cohn here. I know you don't know who I am, but I just bought this drone and I'm certified and insured to fly it. Hey, I was wondering if we could get your battalion chief down here and see if we could just go ahead and do a demo real quick for you guys. What do you say? That's ridiculous, right? But as luck would have it, the opportunity emerged, and that was just yet another great great thing that happened as a result of the media exposure.
You know, I'm a bit of a gearhead at times. And so I'm just curious, maybe Monty, you can talk a little bit about your rig. What sort of hardware, software is in your kit?
Got it. My kit. Well, you're assuming I have only one, Max.
No. I kind of figured that that you'd have a variety for different purposes.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, I wish I had only one, and yet I have yet to find the perfect solution. And, you know, something that allows me to have, you know, I started with one drone that did amazing photography, amazing imagery, and you know, with full GPS and hover mode and return to home and those types of things. And then when I got into the video piece, I found that it was extremely lacking. It couldn't handle video well at all. And so thus began the journey for a second drone. And that second drone, it's almost like the Three Bears story. You know, my porridge is too hot. My porridge is too cold. My second drone did exactly the opposite. The second drone was amazing at video and stabilization and neglected some of the fundamental things about still photos, being able to have an FPV, you know, the first person view, having a monitor and being able to see what the UAV sees in real time. So I use a combination of different UAVs for different purposes. And when people ask me, and I'm getting a good 25, 30 phone calls a day from great people all over the nation, very enthusiastic. Some are more business related calls, but the majority of them are just, you know, guys like you and me that want to do some, want to have some fun, not ready to retire, and want to do it safely, right? So, and of course, make some money along the way if that's at all a possibility. But I have different. When people ask me what's the best drone to get, which is the one I should get? Should I get the DJI? Should I get this one over here? You know, some get more attention than others. And right now, I'm playing that a little close to the vest because it's a I'm working with a couple of manufacturers to dial in three things, and that is, in my belief, the three major components of any real, how do I say, really comprehensive drone that I can finally put my stamp of approval on. And that would be, and maybe four things actually, but it's the aircraft itself, the flight characteristics of the aircraft. That's number one. And that includes payload and you know, flight time, things like that. Number two would probably be the gimbal itself, the housing that actually stabilizes the camera. Right, there's a lot of technology, a lot of advances. There's one axis, two axis, and now three axis gimbals that are out there for stabilization purposes that fully articulate in any direction, and a lot of cool stuff going on out there. But again, payload becomes a factor when you start getting into some of that. Number three would be the camera itself. Whether that camera is that just a still camera, or is it just a video camera, or can it do both literally on the fly from your ground base station? Can you just switch it from photo to video on the fly? That's an interesting proposition to be able to have both. While not everyone needs both, the proposition of having both at your fingertips with the flip of a switch is a really interesting prospect and valuable. And what was number four? Number four would be the FPV itself, the monitor, the link, the data link to see not only real-time telemetry, but to see what the UAV is seeing in real time. And so far, there is no single manufacturer that exists today that, in my opinion, I would put my seal of approval on, because all four of those components have been really dialed in, even if it's only a 1.0 type of beta right now, because I know nothing's perfect, but we're going to get there. But those four components are incredibly, as much as you think someone's going to come out with that, they're incredibly elusive right now. Now, 2014, I expect these guys, with a little bit of help, to dial that in. But those are the four components. And to answer your question, finally, is I have used a manufacturer in Saskatoon called Dragonfly for certain reasons. And I've used the DJI Phantom just for kicking the tires and seeing, okay, what's the fuss all about with this DJI and the new Vision? I don't recommend it for a lot of different reasons, and I'm not going to be, after my evaluation of the DJI product, I'm sorry to say that that will not be one that I submit for review to the insurance underwriters, but we will have to develop some sort of safety curriculum around that particular model because it's going to be so accessible to so many consumers. But the number one that I found right now, just in the interest of full disclosure, is from a manufacturer out in Bend, Oregon called X-Pro Heli. And while they are still developing their UAV to have better imagery in terms of the still shots, I got to tell you, their video and the stabilization and the price point, along with their FPVs, they are as close today as any other manufacturer that I have worked with or evaluated to this point. And that's X-Pro Heli, for your listenership.
Yes, right, right. Yeah. 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 I don't know a lot about them, but I am aware of them. Yes.
Unfortunately, Manny, this 30 minutes goes awfully quickly. So what final or words of wisdom or advice for our listeners, those who are just starting out or people who are well down the path, what words of advice do you have for them?
My words of advice, safety, safety, safety. Do yourself a favor. I will be a resource to all that want to do this the correct way. And those people that want to do it legitimately will be fast-tracked through certification and insurance, just like I was. And so they can always reach me at Monty@DontTellMeShowMe.com. Monty@DontTellMeShowMe.com. I'm sure it'll be on your show notes. And I promise to keep you and your listenership appraised of the advances that take place all the way. But guys, safety first. Please, please, please get your training. Get some flight under your belt. Document every flight that you do, because the FAA is going to require that flight log in the future for those that want to get fast track for certification and insurance.
Monty, let me just slip in a quick one. What are your thoughts on the approach that the FAA is taking and sort of the length of time that it's taking and the strategy with the six test sites?
You know, it doesn't, obviously it's not fast enough. And the FAA, I liken it, unfortunately, to the DMV. It's very slow and very painful, right? They're doing something, right? Now, there's an economic component, absolutely, to the six test sites that they have selected. But the chains are being moved down the field. The ball is moving forward. And for that, I am grateful. What FAA is going to require outside of their own self-appointed wisdom, forgive me, is they're going to be able to form policies based on just the sheer magnitude and the momentum of those of us that have been doing this and doing it correctly with safety in mind, first and foremost. They're going to reach out and require, or at least incorporate those that have been doing this successfully without incident and backed by the insurance companies as low risk. So, Max, I approve of what the FAA is doing because they're doing something. Mm. And for that, I'm grateful. And I hope to be a part of helping them create policy in the months to come.
Okay, Max, you know you heard him. Are you keeping a logbook of your flight time?
Starting tomorrow.
Max, do yourself a favor.
All right. You've been listening to episode 22 of the UAV Digest. You can find show notes at theuavdigest.com or the shortcut, theuavdigest.com/22 for episode 22. And we'd like to thank our guest, Monty Cohn. Monty, the website is www.DontTellMeShowMe.com.
DontTellMeShowMe.com, just like it sounds.
You can find us also on Twitter at UAV Digest, same on Facebook, UAV Digest. And if you'd like to send us an email, the address you can use is feedback@theuavdigest.com.
Yeah, we'd like to thank our guest, Manny. It was fantastic. Hopefully you'll come back and visit us again in the future as we move down the thing. And until next week, this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.